Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the globe. We are here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They are guaranteed to always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Victoria Jones. Victoria is a 42-year-old mother of one, who has recently given up her corporate career in communications to take up a franchise in the UK's longest-running baby signing company, Sing and Sign. Baby signing is becoming more and more popular among parents and experts alike, with many agreeing that it provides a fantastic way for babies to learn to communicate long before speech is possible. The keyword signs are taught using a mix of well-known nursery rhymes and original songs with signs as hand actions. So it's no harder than learning Incy Wincy Spider. I can remember that, and I'm really old. Like all the franchise owners and teachers within the group, all of whom are former customers of Sing and Sign, Victoria is passionate about the program's efficacy, with her own 2-year-old son being an articulate testament to the success that can be achieved. Covering the Weald of Kent in southeast England, Victoria now brings the fun, interactive and musical signing classes to babies and their parents or carers. Victoria, thank you for being interviewed. We met at a networking group, didn't we? Ladies Who Latte.
We did.
A few weeks ago, and I thought, oh, no, I'm not a parent. So you would think that this would just kind of go shoop, straight over my head of no interest, but I found it completely fascinating. I suppose I found it fascinating because some of the work that I do around mind mapping and vision boarding when I'm working in corporate companies, I have a lot of people who come up to me after that and say, thank you, I'm dyslexic. I find it really difficult to plan meetings, agendas, presentations. Now I found a way to do it with images and pictures, so I find it easier to communicate and I'm now going to be far less stressed. So I'm always fascinated to find out about different ways of communication rather than the very linear left brain approach that we think is the only way.
Yes.
So how did you first hear about it?
Oh, blimey. Well, I've always been interested in communication. I've studied languages at university, and we had a linguistics component of that which covered language acquisition in children, which I found absolutely fascinating. But then it was probably more to do with my sister who sort of ran with that idea, and she studied conductive education.
What's that?
Conductive education is treating children with cerebral palsy, spina bifida, various forms of brain damage at birth. So they have a spectrum of disabilities, both mental and physical. And conductive education will look at the individual child and provide the best way of allowing that child to reach its potential physically and mentally.
Okay.
And obviously a core component of that is speech or communication. So she is now much more heavily focused on augmentative and alternative communication, AAC. And she does that out in Western Australia. But
wow,
does
she?
Yeah. She left a long time ago. But she started signing with her babies with her babies, you know, in her classes, and then she had children of her own and she signed with them as babies, and I was instantly fascinated, and I didn't have any of the skepticism that I think some people might greet it with, because these are hearing children with hearing parents. Why would you need to sign? But I was interested to see what could be achieved. And they came to visit with my nephew, who at the time was 19, 20 months old. And I remember we were dropping them off at the airport, and my brother-in-law was holding my nephew, and he was wearing a rucksack which had a little whistle on the shoulder. And my nephew was trying to blow it and he couldn't. And my brother-in-law blew it. My nephew tried again and my brother-in-law blew it again. And then I just saw this look in Alfie's eyes and he made a sign. If you can describe what that might look like.
Okay, so little finger and index finger up and the two middle fingers down.
That's
held by
it.
The thumb.
And he moved
them.
So
a very
them.
Wide V.
Yes, and he moved it across his face. So I said, what was that? And he said, that's the sign for a train. And this child, who's under 2 years old, was equating the whistle sound with the whistle of a steam engine that he'd seen when he was 15 or 16 months. So the signing aspect is not just about needs and requirements. They have lots and lots of quite abstract thoughts, and they can remember things, and they can't necessarily tell that to you. But in that one sign, he was able to say, "Oh, Daddy, it sounds like that steam engine that we saw 4 or 5 months ago." And I was absolutely blown away. Wow. And that was the moment that I decided that if I was to ever meet the right person and have children, I was going to sign with them.
Wow.
And I made that decision there and then, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Then you did meet the right person, you did have children.
Eventually.
And you did do it.
Yes, eventually.
Wow. So how does it work then? I mean, at what point do you start?
So I started with my son Tommy right from birth. And the simplest sign and the most necessary sign at that age is the sign for milk, which is an open hand clenching into a fist and opening again. It comes from milking a cow. So it's not a particularly attractive sign.
But very descriptive and very apt.
Yes, yeah. And really easy to do actually as well. So every time I was talking about milk to my child, so he was crying, and inevitably with a newborn, it's often for milk. So the point of signing with babies is that you don't just sign, you speak and sign at the same time. And then they start to latch the coming consequence with the sign that they can see. So it's the visual communication. So I would say, "Yes, darling, I know you're crying. You want some milk. Okay, milk's coming. I'll get you milk." And I'd be signing the word milk every time I say the word milk. And at 9 or 10 weeks old, he recognised it. Because he was screaming and screaming, and that scenario happened. I said, "Yes, you want milk." And he stopped screaming and looked me right in the eyes, just absolutely silent. He started again 2 seconds later, but he did stop.
Okay.
And yeah, there was definitely a moment of, "Hang on, I know what this means. You're going to, you now, I know that you understand my needs and you're going to meet my needs." And then he screamed, but it was in a totally different way. And then, then it was the impatient cry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you start, does that also help you as a parent start to understand the different meanings of the screams?
Yes, I mean, there is a whole system devoted to what the cries sound like, the different cries, called Dunstan Baby Ears.
Oh.
And that was devised, I'm not completely familiar with the whole backstory, but from what I understand, the woman was the daughter of scientists and actually an opera singer with perfect pitch. And when she had a child, she noticed that there were basically 5 distinct cries, and she could tell them apart. And she started looking into them and realised that they all happened at specific times. So there was one for hunger, one for tiredness, one for discomfort, one for wet, and one probably for fear or something like that. And so there's this entire system. And apparently, I haven't researched this, but apparently research says that these cries are around the world. They're exactly the same, regardless of culture, which is really interesting.
It is. Mm. Yeah. So language, in the way that we understand language, is almost irrelevant if we go back to the core of who we are as human beings. We can actually communicate without the spoken language, can't we? Because
well,
there
we
are certain
done.
Things.
Yes.
And it's amazing, actually, when you do travel, which I do a lot, that facial expressions, you can communicate with facial expressions.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And everybody knows what you're talking about.
I mean, don't they say it's something like the efficacy of your message or the...
93% is not the words.
Is not verbal.
It's your body language and your facial expression.
Exactly.
Body language is 55%. Tone of voice and pitch of 38.
Yeah.
Facial expression and body language is 55. Yes, yeah, so 93, which is why, of course, emails and text messages are so dangerous.
Yes.
Because we're only dealing with 7% of the message. Mm-hmm. Scary business. But I'm a cat lover.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I could tell what the cat was doing based on the meow. Because there was a meow for food.
Absolutely.
There's a meow for pick me up and cuddle me. There's a meow for I've got a present for you.
Yes.
Where do you want it? Depends if it's still alive. So of course.
So why should we be any different?
Of course, you're going to with the children. And I guess as mothers, you're so tuned in. And it's interesting with some of the work that I've done looking at men and women. Is there a difference with men and women? I mean, obviously, apart from the obvious biological differences, clearly there is a difference. But with the way our see, hear, listen, everything else, you know, with our hearing, with our sight, And yes, there is. I'm not sure in the way we think it's necessarily different.
Mm.
You know, I think there's...
I think there we probably process. I think we process information quite differently.
I think we do,
And I think we probably try to have different results from the information that we're processing.
Yeah.
You know,
so the driver for that information is different, and what we want to do with it is different.
Yeah.
But women have evolved to hear high-pitched sounds more effectively than men.
Absolutely.
Because they're tuned in to listen to babies crying.
Yes.
Women do have eyes in the backs of their heads. Whereas men do tend to actually have something right in front of them. They say, where's the... just look right in front of your nose, darling. It's just there. So, yeah, I mean, we have evolved to see and hear differently, haven't we? So I guess we are finely tuned in the evolvement of all of our senses.
Mm.
To pick up the nuances. So it's there. But I wonder how many parents... Is it as effective for fathers to do this as it is for mothers to do this? Or are mothers better?
The baby is or the signing?
The signing.
Absolutely either. Yes. Okay. Absolutely it could be either. I think men probably get quite a lot out of it because it's proactive.
Okay, interesting.
You know, you're starting something off and it's physical and you're introducing a new way of communication to your child. I mean, certainly my partner is a real proponent. He absolutely advocates it. He can't believe it.
And he did it as well?
Yes, he did. I would come home from my classes and show him the signs that we'd learnt that day and he would commit them to memory and be practising and test me on them. Very male brain. Wow. and he signed all the way through and he's actually quite gutted that our son is starting to drop some of the signs.
Oh, but, because he's learning language.
Oh, his language. Yeah, his verbal communication is intense. It's absolutely amazing. He's got tenses nailed. He can speak with the conditional, the past. He gets almost everything right. My favourite wrong thing he says... actually, maybe I shouldn't talk about it. It's nappy humour.
I'm sure that will be fine. Ricky.
I needed to ask him if he'd actually filled his nappy or not. I said, have you done a poo? He said, no, I didn't. I just done a pop.
Sweet.
And that was just a week or so ago. And But whilst it's very, very wrong what he said, he's actually completely right. I used the verb in the past tense, have you done? And then he took... done and made it a negative. No, I dunnant. And then he turned it into just a past participle and said, I just dunned a pop. So he's actually spot on. His grammar's spot on. He just doesn't realise that's an irregular verb, you know, which he needs to learn.
Wow.
But we'll get there.
Yes. Now, as you only have currently one child.
Yes.
Who's two. And you started doing the signing within a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a comparison to know how he would have been if you hadn't done it.
No, that's right. No.
So where's the measurement that shows
well,
that
this
works?
Well, this is it. There isn't a measurement and it can't really be measured very easily. There has been some research done and there was a research done, I can't remember where, but there was a study done that had three different groups and one was a control group that just did nothing and just spoke as normal around the home. And I think the babies were something like 11 to 18 months, perhaps a little bit in beyond that, I'm not sure. So there was one group like that. There was one group who did lots and lots of signing and there was another group who had, I think, post-it notes on objects that as you went around the room you'd say I'm going to put the TV on and you know you'd point at it and it was just to kind of to make you start pointing at objects and that sort of thing. And in that group they did better than the group that the control group, but the signing group did better still. And you know later on at age two or three or whatever it was, their speech was better than the other two groups. It's only a small survey that was done or a small bit of research that was done. I think what you find, though, is that it's never going to be detrimental. It's never going to hold speech back.
Sure, sure.
So if you're providing your child with a way to express themselves that's slightly different, for example, so Tommy's two and he doesn't just say big. He'll also say enormous and massive and huge. Because you use the same sign for all of them. So he understands their similes. And they mean the same thing, but just with different kind of nuances or inflection or whatever. And he's already grasped that, that there are different words that mean the same thing and can be and can express things in slightly different ways, which I think wouldn't come about normally until a bit later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that is quite sophisticated, really.
Very sophisticated. So how does this get balanced out then when the children who have been brought up since birth with signing and they start going to school and they are in a classroom of same age classmates who haven't been brought up with this, teaching is still going to be focused at that age towards the ones with the minimal vocabulary. So is there a danger that these children are going to get bored and start to feel left behind and get a bit frustrated?
I would hope that wouldn't be the case, and I would hope that any school would, you know, identify any children who are going to be sailing away if that's actually what's going to happen. But don't forget, this is only bringing on speech. It's not necessarily bringing on mathematical ability or anything like that. Sure. I mean, that's not to say it's not going to help, because firing up the brain early is always going to be a good thing. You're teaching the brain to think and to create lots of new neural networks and all of this kind of stuff. So it's great for the brain development. There's no two ways about it. In terms of schooling, I mean, actually, research is showing at the moment that 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds are turning up at school unable to communicate.
Gosh.
They just don't have the ability. Now, whether that's because of how they've been brought up is hard to say, but there's a lot that suggests that it's, you know, we live in a world where we sit glued to our smartphones or watching the TV and we put our children in front of the TV, and there's lots of things out there now that suggest that that's not the best thing to be doing for your child, and that TV doesn't actually help a child to learn to speak, and it doesn't fire the brain in the same way because it's passive.
Yeah,
you just sit there and it happens at you.
Yeah.
What signing does, whether it's actually the signing or whether it's the increased interaction between the parent and the child, but does it matter what the reason is? The fact is that it's making them, it helps them to communicate earlier, which reduces frustration all the way around.
Must reduce frustration hugely.
Yeah.
Do you think it's had an impact on sleep patterns?
No.
Okay.
No, you made me smile when you said women are tuned in to the high-pitched noise of their child crying. I thought, yeah, that's why I get up 3 times a night to my son, and my partner doesn't. Oh, yeah. Dear. Yes, no, he's a night waker.
Is he?
So, yes, very much so.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. So. No difference there then.
No. No, and we can talk about it all we like. No. It's just not going to resolve anything. No.
So when did Sing and Sign start? You said you found out about it with your sister.
Yes.
So obviously it's been around for a little. It's not.
Yeah, baby signing itself has been around for quite a long time. And I imagine it probably started in the States. Certainly some of the videos I was watching on YouTube, going back a few years, they were all American videos.
Right.
Sing and Sign as a company has been around for 15 years.
Okay.
Our leader, the owner, Sasha, started it because her daughter had some hearing difficulties and some other issues going on. And it was suggested that that signing might help. And she just fell in love with it and created the program, and it spread and spread. Yeah.
Wow.
And she's a musician as well. So, you know, that really helps.
So where did it all start? I mean, what's the research, the science bit? When did this come from?
Who
discovered it?
I don't know. I don't know. The only thing I can think, and I know that there has been some research done that on deaf babies, and indeed hearing babies of deaf parents who get signed to birth.
Yeah.
And what that shows is that the activity that's going on in the brain as they start to learn to sign, it's, I mean, obviously there is motor, it is at the motor side of things, but it's actually the linguistic part of the brain that's being triggered. It's the language centre in the brain that is firing off in all directions when they start to sign. So it's like the brain is going, the brain doesn't differentiate between communication via hands or communication via speech.
Okay, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. So you don't actually have to verbalise it.
No. which I guess comes back to this.
You can verbalise it with your hands as opposed to with your mouth.
How but that comes back to, you know, the 97%, doesn't it? 93%.
Yeah, true. Wow. So what are you doing with it?
So I have resigned from my position in communications, which I loved, but unfortunately my office relocated and I couldn't go with them. I had just finished my last term of Sing and Sign with my son, and thought, well, let's take it up and let's do it, because there wasn't anything in this patch of Kent. There was one in Tunbridge Wells, and there's some in the north of Kent, and there's some right over in the east, but this little patch in the middle, which is all sort of villages, didn't really have it. And certainly some children's centres are starting to include it on their Baby and You courses, which is a 6-week postnatal course. And but not all of them, so I'm sort of trying to talk to a couple to see if they'll consider having me in to do some classes for them. So I decided to take it up, and I'm just setting up these classes now. So currently I've got classes in Staplehurst and in Etchingham, which is just on the edge of East Sussex, or just in East Sussex. And they're going well. They're small but perfectly formed classes. And I've got some lovely mums and some cracking babies, and they're really good fun, and they're all getting into it. And we have this lovely, lovely little sidekick called Jessie Cat, and she's a beautiful, plush, black and white cat, and she plays peekaboo with them, and she waves and she wiggles her head, and we have to basically be puppeteers. And the children are already, they've only been going for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, and they're already getting really into it, very excited when they see her, and they want their cuddles and everything. And it's great because you can see they're really starting to engage with the program, and a couple are signing, and yeah, it's going really well.
A lovely thing to be involved in.
Oh, it's lovely. It really is lovely. Yeah. And certainly as a customer, when I was going, I was sort of borderline postnatal depression, and to have signed up to a class that I knew I wanted to do, but some mornings just didn't want to get up, just didn't want to go out, couldn't face it. We had some issues with Tommy, and it was very wearing and just very tiring all the time. I mean, having a newborn's always tiring, but you know, he had some issues with silent reflux, so he was throwing up projectile a lot. Oh, and there were some days I'd have to shower and change 4 or 5 times in a day, and it was, you know, when then with a screaming baby in a baby carrier in the bathroom, and you're like, I'm coming, and it was just intense, really intense. And to have signed up to a class that I knew I really, really wanted to do got me out of the house to go and do it. And then we sat there, and it helped me with the communication side, because although I always thought I'd be great at it, sometimes it's really hard when something's not communicating back with you. I am a communicator. I enjoy talking. I enjoy the interaction. But when something refuses to interact back with you, it's quite hard.
It's quite frustrating, isn't it?
It is. And with everything else that was going on, and I was finding life quite tough in the early days, and that class, honestly, I think it really, really helped me with that and sort of kept me on the right side of sane. Mm. And, I'm still friends now with my teacher, and we chat and stuff, and she's always asking after Tommy. And, okay, it's not actually been that long since we were last there, but, you know, time moves on very quickly when you've got a baby. And it's lovely, yeah.
And I guess if you have another one, if that's on the agenda at some point, Tommy will presumably pick up and start signing with the baby.
Absolutely.
With his
brother or sister, which would be lovely. Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, he still signs now. Not all the time. He signs for effect and emphasis. So, more, mummy. I want more, more. And he slaps his hand onto his fist, and I want more. And just to be sure I've understood. Or, look, there's a dog, and his fingers are pointing downwards. It's a dog. And yes, I can see it's a dog. Yeah, so he points for he signs for emphasis. But yes, I think if there was a sibling to come along, you know, and who knows, maybe that would happen. It would be nice. I would hope that he would sign. Yeah, I don't think he's going to forget it in a hurry. Definitely. Well, he's not going to with me teaching it. So.
Well, this is also true. So going back to you teaching it, where do you want to take this? What's your vision for Sing and Sign?
Well, because I have the other job as well, being a proofreader and editor, I can't commit 100% of my time to it. But I would like to see the centre of Kent, Weald of Kent, become really familiar with signing as a natural thing to do with your children. And I want to have three or four locations that are really busy. Mm. And if I can stay in those three or four locations and run several classes there, then so much the better. I want to get into Paddock Wood. And there's a few other places as well. Like my village, where I live in Marden, I think there's a lot of scope for it to be incredibly beneficial for some people there. And that's what I'm hoping, is that we can make it so that it becomes normalised, because you do see people look at you like, really? But my child can hear. No, I don't think so. We're just going to go to, you know, whatever other class is available. But, you know, people understand that music is important, and people understand that moving around is important, and that sensory is important. And they are all important. But so is communication. Mm. It's absolutely fundamental. Mm. You know, it's... If children can speak when they start at school and can express themselves, then they can say to their teacher, I don't understand that, or can you explain that again if something isn't quite working for them? And they can be helped along the way. And a child who is understood and who can be responded to, and this goes right down to babies as well, if a baby is responded to sensitively and time appropriately, it does wonders for the self-esteem going forward. Mm. You end up with a confident child who trusts in his ability to express himself, and that child will go on. And there's been studies done into this as well that shows that a child who can express themselves at entry to school, by the time they're going on to secondary school, they're far less likely to be going into the depths of childhood depression.
Oh, interesting, really?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So wow. It's absolutely key.
Teenage depression, teenage suicide.
It's really taking
awful,
off.
Awful, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, it's such a challenging time. I wouldn't
it's very
anything
difficult.
Go back to teenage years.
No, it's difficult enough anyway. Mm. You know, it was difficult for me. It was difficult, I presume, for you. Because teenage years are difficult.
It's
and I didn't have
time.
Anything. And I didn't have anything going wrong. I wasn't bullied. I didn't have problems at school, nothing. But it still is a testing time.
Yeah,
so for children who are being bullied, and then you add into that the digital stuff that's going on, and how children are being bullied online, and they don't... And we don't know, as grown-ups, how to deal with that, because this is completely new. This is first-generation stuff, and we don't know how to counteract it and how to help our children. So I think if you can start with your child being at least able to communicate and have that sense of self-worth, then, you know, that's a good starting point.
Well, the potential ripple effects of that is huge. Because, you know, I have a strong, whether this is true or not, but I have a very strong belief that most of the world operates from the core emotion of fear.
Mm.
And that is either it's expressed in one of two extremes. Mm. So either people will shut down and become very, very passive and adopt the victim mentality.
Yeah.
Or they compensate for that fear by going to the other extreme and being really aggressive and becoming bullies.
Yes.
But actually fear is what is operating both of those extremes of behaviour.
Mm.
And fear comes from not trusting, and that's not trusting yourself, not having confidence in yourself, in your ability to communicate, to speak.
Absolutely.
To live by your core values, understand what those might be, have that self-esteem.
Yes.
So if we can increase, this is just me kind of thinking, having a bit of a mind dump, if we can increase the self-belief and self-worth of children at a young age, then we are potentially creating generations in the future that don't have to be either of those extremes, but can actually sit in the balance of the middle.
It would be
and
nice.
And what difference could that potentially make to the world?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's huge. If you take it, you know, sing and sign could be the future to actually save the planet. But, yeah, okay, it might be a little bit. But
might
you kind of get where I'm going with this.
Yeah, totally.
I mean,
absolutely. I think, you know, I think certainly the better our children can communicate, the better they will be as grown-ups. Absolutely. And then have you seen the research that into meditation?
Yes.
And you know that I think if you could get children who can communicate and children who can reflect, then you're going to have a generation that is going to be far more peaceful. I would hope.
It's about that emotional balance, isn't it?
Definitely.
And being able to deal, because life isn't perfect, thank good. What is perfection? It doesn't exist.
No.
But you know, you are going to have the peaks and the troughs. And it's acquiring the skills, emotional and mental and psychological skills, to be able to deal with the extremes of that life will throw at you.
Yeah.
So it doesn't completely derail you. You might, you know, wobble for a bit, but it's not going to completely derail you. And you're going to get back and find that balance again through
life.
That's
right.
Yeah. It's really, really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, really exciting stuff. So what were you doing in communications in the corporate world?
I worked in internal comms for a waste management company.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Glamour.
Very glamorous. Let's go back to sing a song.
No, I really enjoyed it. We were a large company, about 3,500 employees, and the internal comms team was very small. So it was really at the edge of it all, right there, just watching it all happen. And it was very interesting. I learned a lot in there. Different ways to communicate, and also had the opportunity to do the Gallup Strengths Finder test while I was there, which is really interesting stuff. And discovered that my number one strength is empathy. I kind of worried about it quite a lot, because I had empathy, and then there was connectedness and intellectualism and all of this kind of stuff, but there was no strategy, there was no leadership, and all my colleagues around me in the wider comms team had all these things. And I spoke to my director and I said, I'm not quite sure how this is going to help me, and shouldn't I be doing some training so that I can learn some strategy or something? And he just said, you're in internal comms, you need empathy. It's absolutely the key thing you need. He said, you have to be able to write so that your reader understands what you're saying, and you have to understand your reader in order to do that. So empathy is the right thing to have. So he was a forward thinking man. So I was pleased with that, actually. And sort of running with the empathy, I think that's partly why I got attracted to the sing and sign as a teacher as well. I empathize, obviously, with mothers, whether they're struggling or not. Every day can be difficult. I mean, some days you have absolutely glorious days, of course you do, but they are difficult, and I don't actually think we're very well prepared for it as a society, as a culture. I don't think we talk about motherhood and the pros and the cons, and we certainly don't have that network of female family members around us all the time. Some people live very, very far away from their mothers. Look at my sister, she's 8,000 miles away. I couldn't possibly live closer to my mum if I tried, but to have that whole large network of women around us, and back in the day, little girls were involved in babies, in raising babies, in raising children. It was just part and parcel of life, and so they knew what to expect when a baby came along, and they were much better prepared for it. And these days, rightly, it's all about education and let's do this and let's do that. But if we're going to go on and be mothers, I think we need to be a little bit better prepared. And I think part of me wanted to take this course on because I do believe it helps to alleviate frustrations, and it provides this framework of communication for a child to be able to express its wants, needs, desires and everything else. And if you as a parent can say to your child who's not really that verbal, but you can say, say you've got an 18-month-old child having an absolute meltdown, and you can say, do you want to go out, should we go out, go to the park? And the child does this and starts pumping its arms backwards and forwards. You go, yeah, we'll go on the swings. Okay, let's put our shoes on, and out you go. And you've told that child what's happening. Or if you say that and the screaming gets worse, you say, okay, not that. Are you hungry? Do you want to eat? And they stop crying, or they sign the eat sign back to you. You go, okay, you're hungry, that's fine. It might not be food time. It might not be according to your schedule when your child should be eating. But if they're hungry, give them something to eat, If they can tell you that's what the problem is, give them something to eat. And, respond sensitively to their needs. And I think just knowing that you can alleviate some of those frustrations, make life just that little bit easier for mums in what's actually a very difficult time, then so much the better.
It's interesting. I just want to take you back to a comment that you made at the beginning of that bit, when you said mothers aren't prepared as much as perhaps they were when community was different.
Yeah.
So it can come as a bit of a shock.
Mm.
But I think that's very much a Western thing. I'm not sure it happens in other cultures.
No, absolutely. I think it's this culture.
But the bit I wanted to pick you up on, is it just mothers who aren't prepared, or is it parents?
Parents. Yes, maybe it's parents. But then the role of the father has changed dramatically backwards and forwards through the thousands of years, whereas the mother's role hasn't really changed that much, apart from the closer we get to modern day, the more they've gone out to work. But the mother has always been the prime carer of the child.
But does that mean that that is still the case and it will be the case in the future? I mean, what confuses me is why in the 21st century we still have the phrase the working mother and not the working father or the working parent.
Yes.
That it is still deemed to be, usually by the mother, that it is the mother's 100% responsibility to bring up that child. And that it's her career that is going to be impacted. And I wonder how many parents sit down and have the discussion, now we are parents, how are we going to manage our careers?
I think more than we think probably do have that conversation. Friends of mine had that conversation, most definitely. They had twin girls 5 days before Tommy was born.
Gosh.
And decided that, not even decided, the decision was already there, made in front of them. The mother's salary was greater than the father's salary, therefore she would be the one going back to work after her maternity. She would, and I can't remember if she took the full year off or not, but yeah, she was the one who went back to work and her husband stayed home and looked after the children. And he did that for 18 months, nearly 2 years. And he's now gone back and they've got childcare in to look after. And so, yes, I think that conversation does happen financially. But I think where there isn't a financial compromise that has to be made, you know, if both parents are earning fairly equally, I think hormones have a lot to play in it.
Okay.
I really do. I think you know, you're saying we're wired to hear our babies. We are. We're wired to hear our babies and we're wired to be near them.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of people that feel that they would rather be the ones raising their child. And, you know, by the same token, there's a lot as well who say, no, actually, I need to go back and get my sanity back and get, you know, start using my brain again and be a grown up again. And I want my career back. And that's absolutely fine, too. And they're the ones, you know, who are able to bring in childcare or nannies or use grandparents or.
Yeah,
whatever.
I mean, hormones have a lot to answer for, don't they?
Absolutely.
In so many ways. Yeah. They do rule us for most of our lives, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. You don't have to tell me that.
Yeah, you wait till you hear the menopause bell boy. You have no idea, Victoria, what's waiting for you in about 15 years' time.
Oh, I can't wait.
I thought
that and a 17-year-old boy. Yay!
Oh, the deep joys.
So I'll be menopausal with a son driving my car for the first time. Wow.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see who's the most unstable emotionally.
It'll be me. It will be me, definitely.
Oh, gosh, yes, the joys of hormones. Yeah, I mean, and that is an interesting one. And I suppose it is interesting. And I have this conversation a lot with the work that I do with women in leadership in the corporate world. And I have a lot of women who say to me, I don't know how to deal with the guilt of going back to work.
Absolutely.
So, and then I ask them the question, well, have you sat down with your child's father and had that discussion? Mm. Now we are parents. Why are you assuming 100% responsibility for the upbringing of your child?
Mm.
I can absolutely get the impact of hormones, but they do settle down. And we're talking about, we're not just talking until they go to school. It's like you are accepting responsibility for parenting for the rest of your life. And that is not appropriate, actually. It is a dual role. And are you going to trust your child's father enough to have a strong role in parenting?
I think in the modern day, I think most people
do. It's amazing how many women come back to me and look at me and actually start to look slightly embarrassed and go, oh yeah, actually you've got a point there. No, I don't trust him to do it properly. I don't trust him to put the nappy on the right way or
oh really,
or, oh my, you know, goodness, you know, stuff like that. And,
oh, but, no,
right, and from, then they say, and that's my fault.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So it's, right, it's from day balance, one, I knew that we were always going to split all of that side of things. And yeah, and he's been very, very good. And he is a great dad. And I absolutely trust him to look after him. That's why we might have the odd difference of opinion, but we've especially now that Tommy's two and he's starting to do the Mummy, can I do this? And I'll say, no, darling, no. And he'll go, Daddy, straight away, yeah, in front of me. He hasn't learned discretion yet at all. And we just look at each other like... But yeah, so we've had the conversation where it says we have to back each other up, even if Absolutely. We actually disagree, take it out the room and have that conversation. But, you know, in front of him, we've got to back each other up 100% right from the start, because otherwise he's going to play us off against each other so badly.
Children are so smart.
They really are. They really are.
So in the last few seconds, where would you like to see this go? Or, you know, what's your wildest, biggest vision for this? What would you like to see happen?
Oh, my wildest, biggest vision for Sing and Sign as a whole, or for my little part of Sing and Sign?
Both.
For Sing and Sign as a whole, I mean, it's already the leading signing company. I would like it to be a lot more well-known, a lot better known. That's better English, isn't it? A lot better known. I think... I'd also like signing to be seen as I said before, as something that is completely normal and natural to do with your child, whether you're hearing, non-hearing, got any sort of disabilities or special needs. Just bring it in and use it. It's not going to be detrimental. It's not going to delay anything. And any effect it does have is going to be beneficial. Plus, you know, there's the interaction, the BABES course that we do, which is from birth up to 6 months. We do some signs, but it's not about getting the baby signing. It's about getting the baby to understand about communication. It's eye contact, it's facial expressions, it's gesture, everything we were talking about before. And it's all about setting that up in the under 6 month old baby so that it knows to interact. And that also gives the parents something to do and to feel that they're doing something worthwhile and it's achieving something. I would like to see everybody thinking that this is completely normal. You know, we accept that it's perfectly fine to take a child to a play group and that children need to play. But let's just say, have you been to your signing class yet? Have you signed up yet for that? You
know? Okay. So getting it into the consciousness.
Yeah.
That absolutely. It's just part of what you do.
Yeah. And that it has a place and it's not just a yummy mummy thing. Because I think there's a lot of... I think there's a thought that it's perhaps just something, you know, it's faddy or, it's some like taking your child to, you know, sit in a room where they're playing Mandarin Chinese all day or something, you know, when it's not necessarily going to have a need for that anytime soon. It's like, it's not that. This actually is something that you can do with your child once a week at class, take it home with you, do it all day, every day, practice it, keep it going, and it actually has real benefit to your child. And you will see those benefits very, very quickly as well. Not necessarily in the child signing. Some children don't sign at all, but they understand you signing to them.
So the impact on them of being understood
is
the same.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Brilliant. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you very much for having me.
Fun.
Yes, I've loved
it. Really enjoyed it. So you've been listening to Katie Day and Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women around the world. Women are the new future. We are awesome, fabulous, fearless, courageous. In fact, we just rock.